Hello? Is this thing on? What happened to the studio? I feel like Rip Van Winkle. I'm out for a couple of months, and I come back and everything's changed. Well, it has been 3.5 months since I last appeared on the What's Happening Network, which is now called Right Wing Media. But I am back. My name is Brian Allman, and this is What's Happening, Gem State. As most of you likely know, I accepted a position with the Idaho Freedom Foundation as communications director, doing my best to fill Dustin Hurst's very large shoes. That has unsurprisingly kept me very busy over the last 3 months. Weekdays have been full and some Saturdays have been full, and I simply haven't had the time to come out to this beautiful new studio. But here I am, and the last 3 months have been incredible. It's kind of funny. It's providential, even. As I looked ahead last year to the coming session, I was hoping to be able to spend more time at the Capitol and get closer to the action, you know, to be able to report on it for all my publications. Well, I got my wish in spades. I had the opportunity this year to see the legislative session up close and personal, as close as a person could be without actually being in the legislature or on their staff. I learned a lot about the process of making law, as well as the politics behind the politics, so to speak. My suspicions of how much personal agendas play in the process was more than confirmed. There are a lot of egos at play in this field, which I suppose is to be expected. My duties with IFF have kept me busy. I hosted Capital Clarity 9 times, I produced several IFF podcasts, I helped publish dozens of articles and research papers, and I even wrote a few of my own. I sent out dozens of emails to our supporters, and I personally testified on 2 separate bills before legislative committees. I like to think I made some good acquaintances, maybe even some friends, but I'm sure I made some enemies as well. I don't think that Chuck Winder or Kevin Cook will be inviting me over to dinner anytime soon. On the other hand, I think there is value in keeping lines of communication open, even with people that you completely disagree with. For example, I've been really impressed with Wayne Hoffman since I started at IFF, and this isn't just flattery. Not only is his knowledge and experience with Idaho politics unmatched, but I especially respect how he's able to sit down and have conversations with almost anyone. News media calls him an extremist, but he's willing to sit and engage in discourse with people from the far right to the far left without compromising his own principles. That's been my own goal ever since I started this foray into the world of political discourse. I want to be able to have productive dialogue with people who run the gamut of political opinions, keeping an open mind, but never straying from my own beliefs. For the most part, it's worked out. This path isn't without peril, though. Every time I say something remotely kind about so-called establishment figures, I get scorn from my right. They tell me we're at war. On the other hand, I got dogpiled a few months ago because I disagreed with one of how my legislators voted on a particular issue, and it wasn't just spirited debate, rather it brought out all sorts of people who, many of whom don't even follow the issues, who were just offended that I would dare disagree with their guy. It got personal. It's okay to disagree in politics. I'll do my best to always play it straight when I'm engaging with people on the issues. If my representatives vote contrary to what I believe is right, I will say so. On the other hand, if they vote in a way I agree with, I'll say so too. I don't want to get caught up in this paradigm where I'm not allowed to say good things about one person or bad things about another. For example, I enjoyed watching Josh and Kirsten talk with Senator Ben Adams the other day, in this very room. There was some disagreement, but they were able to have a cordial and productive conversation, and that was great. Actually, Ben frustrates me, because I really like him personally, so I get more annoyed when he votes wrongly than I do with other legislators. However, when he is on, he's on. He had by far the best testimony in favor of House Bill 71, which bans drugs and surgery to try and change the physical sex of children. He pointed out that when he came back from Afghanistan suffering from PTSD, his counselors helped him overcome it rather than enabling it, which is what trans activists demand we do with children suffering from gender dysphoria. Speaking of House Bill 71, it passed both chambers and is sitting on the governor's desk as I record this. It's such an important piece of legislation, and I hope the governor does the right thing and signs it. It was a privilege to meet Chloe Cole when she visited Idaho in February. It was really important to Dustin that she come out here and speak to our legislature in person about what she had been through. It's so easy to dismiss this subject when it's far away, or when the only people speaking on it are all in favor of these awful surgeries and drugs. But when someone with her experience comes here in person, it is hard to ignore. Governor Brad Little, He's been a source of tremendous frustration this year. It would be one thing if he was an outright villain like Jay Inslee, Gavin Newsom, or Meg Whitmer, but it's all the more frustrating because he's a Republican who's simply not interested in pursuing conservative values. He's starting his second term. He's got a ton of political capital and almost zero risk. He could do basically anything at this point. Imagine if he was a Ron DeSantis, a Greg Abbott, or a Kristi Noem. If he got behind some piece of conservative legislation, like school choice, for example, he could have easily pushed it through our legislature. Instead, he used every ounce of political capital on the foolish launch grant. $8,000 for workforce training for so-called in-demand careers, basically a handout to his friends in IACI. Now, the debacle about House Bill 292 should be remembered as a humiliation for the governor. Where should I begin with this story? So, several legislators have been trying to fix property taxes for years now. Property taxes are pretty evil, don't you think? You buy your house, you pay off the mortgage, you own it free and clear, but wait! A dozen different taxing districts have eternal liens on your home. Property taxes mean that every American is a permanent renter to the government. Even if you rent, you're still paying taxes. They're built into your monthly payment. As a consumer, you're paying for business property taxes built into the price of goods and services. If you own your own home, take a look at your property tax statement. You have the city, the county, the school district, the fire district, the library district, the cemetery district, the mosquito abatement district. Did I miss any? Each of these taxing districts is run by an elected board that can decide to raise your taxes by 3% every year. It's absolutely absurd. Thankfully, some of our representatives recognize that and are trying to fix it. But fixing property taxes is hard. The state government doesn't actually have anything to do with property taxes. It's all at the county level and below. But everyone demands that the legislature do something, so they keep trying to come up with various ideas. This year, Senator Scott Groh, Speaker Mike Moyle, and Representative Jason Monks put their ideas together into one big compromise bill, House Bill 292. It was passed by both chambers with overwhelming majorities. So the deal is done, right? Not so fast. The public school establishment took issue with the removal of the March bond and levy election date, and presumably let Governor Little know that this was unacceptable. The governor vetoed 292, and Senate leadership implemented a plot to pass a replacement. Since the state constitution says that all revenue-generating bills must originate in the House, the Senate couldn't simply draft their own. Instead, they took House Bill 198, which was already passed in the House, and did some Frankenstein-style work on it to transform it into a new property tax bill, one that did not remove the March levy date. Do you see what's going on behind the scenes here? The governor and Senate leadership were setting up a showdown with Speaker Moyle and the House. It's been rumored that elements of the establishment want Moyle out of the way because he hasn't been playing their game. For example, after the Senate passed Joint Memorial 101 calling for immigration reform, including amnesty, and yes, it absolutely calls for amnesty, Speaker Moyle shuffled it off to the House Agricultural Committee, where it died a quiet death. In any case, the House was having none of the Senate's shenanigans. They rejected the amendments to 198 and promptly overrode the governor's veto of 292. This put the Senate in a bind now. If they wanted to fulfill their campaign promises to deliver some sort of property tax relief this year, their only choice was to vote to complete the override of the veto. They spent hours caucusing over the next day, and leadership finally threw in the towel. The Senate voted to override the veto on a party-line vote. Every Republican voted for the override, while every Democrat voted to sustain it, which is kind of funny if you think about it. And for the first time since 2007, a governor of Idaho had his veto overridden by the legislature. Now, both the House and the Senate did pass a so-called trailer bill that fixed some of the issues the governor had in the original bill regarding transportation bonds, but the March levy date is gone. Hopefully, Governor Little does not attempt another showdown by vetoing the genital mutilation bill or the library porn bill that passed last week. Seriously, though, imagine if we had a governor who was on the side of traditional values, of small government, of the people of the state rather than big businesses and special interests. Not only could he push good legislation, but consider the vast powers of the governor. He appoints all but one member of the State Board of Education. He appoints every agency head throughout the entire bureaucracy. He appoints the state Supreme Court justices. Remember that the court, a few months ago, upheld Idaho's abortion ban on a 3-2 vote. It was close. It should have been 5-0 if we had a governor who actually promoted conservative principles. Instead, Brad Little is a bog-standard Republican, frozen in time from 1999, who seems to think that the platform should be about tax cuts and subsidizing business and nothing else. He has signed some good conservative legislation, like protecting women's sports and banning abortion, but his heart is clearly not in the culture war. If we had a DeSantis, or Gnome, or Abbott, instead of a Little, think about what might be possible. There is nothing we couldn't do. One thing we can do is take a moment to hear from our sponsors. I'm told that Mike Lindell has a special pillow for right-wing media listeners. Check it out.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your support by bringing you the pillow that started it all. Get my standard My Pillow, regularly $49.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Just like all of you, I've tried every pillow out there, and none of them worked. That's why I invented My Pillow. My patented fill adjusts your exact individual needs, helps keep your neck aligned, and it holds its shape all night long, regardless of your sleep position. So you get the best sleep of your life. Because it works, we've sold over 70 million My Pillows, and now I'm bringing them to you for the lowest price ever. Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get my standard My Pillow for only $19.98. For a more custom fit, my premium queen for only $27.98. Or my premium king, only $34.98. My 60-day money-back guarantees it'll be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
As a reminder, you can support me directly by subscribing to the Gem State Substack. As a free subscriber, you receive every post, about 3 each week, in your inbox. As a paid subscriber, you help me make the time to create content that I hope is informative and inspirational. It means a lot to me that so many people subscribe and share my work, so go to gemstate.substack.com to subscribe today. Hello again, and welcome back to What's Happening Gem State. My name is Brian Ullman. One of the most frustrating things I learned watching the 2023 legislative session up close was how much taxpayer money the state wastes every year. The budget for Idaho state government is expected to be more than $14 billion this year. That's billion with a B. While some functions of government are clearly necessary, such as roads, law enforcement, and public education, quiet down, libertarians, a look at our state's budget shows that we're paying for a lot more than that. You see, every agency in our government believes that they are the most imperative part of the whole state, and they zealously fight for every dollar in their budget. State agencies and the governor's office, they all have full-time staffs who come down to the Capitol each year and give slick presentations on why they deserve more of our money. After sitting through dozens and dozens of these presentations, members of JFAC, the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee, are often convinced that they're doing a noble deed by appropriating our money. Do you ever have that feeling of largesse, of generosity, when you leave a big tip at a restaurant? Well, that's what our representatives are doing. That's what they're feeling. Only it's not their money that they're throwing around. It's our money. I imagine it's hard to be the one legislator who stands up and says no. Every budget has an emotional component, and corporate media is prepared to make you out to be the devil for opposing it. Does the University of Idaho really need an additional $1 million for grief counseling after the horrific murders last year? Does the state really need to be paying for people's childcare? Should the state really be funding public television? Do we need an arts commission? A commission on Hispanic affairs? What about the Bean Commission? We're in this situation today because the legislature has never had the spine to say no. Each successive governor adds new agencies and bureaucracies, and always for good reasons. But that's the trick, isn't it? There's always something that the legislature can justify spending other people's money on, and then pat themselves on the back for their generosity. I watched debate after debate where legislators stood up on the House and Senate floors to present this or that budget. They each talked as if this was the most important thing that the taxpayers of Idaho should be funding. In the end, it all added up to about $14 billion. Now, you might point out that some of that is federal money, and that's true. But it's still our tax dollars, only laundered through the federal bureaucracy before being so generously returned to we the people. As Ron Nate said on last week's episode of Fiscal Fridays over at IFF, taking federal money always comes with strings, and so this parasitic relationship with Washington, D.C. impacts both our budgets and our policies. The reason that the feds can micromanage our state is because we've become addicted to their money. Fixing this problem requires a legislature not only willing to say no when the bureaucrats come begging for bigger budgets, but also with the courage to start actually reducing government. It's not enough merely to stop the growth of government. We must actively shrink government. Too many legislators think that their job is to simply rubber stamp the budgets of the executive branch agencies. I heard several debates on the floor saying just that, that they had no right to try to cut these budgets at all. Both the bureaucrats and many of our representatives feel downright entitled to our tax dollars. Imagine if they had to raise the money themselves. Imagine they had to sell merch or do live streams and collect super chats. Imagine you were allowed to keep your own money. You see, we've grown accustomed to government growing ever larger off the taxpayers' backs. It's simply normal that the government is a big bloated beast that expands year after year. It's one of the many things that we've become acclimatized to over the past few generations. You see, I've noticed something strange since I came to Idaho nearly 5 years ago. Many Republicans, whose families migrated to this region before Idaho was even a state, are sometimes the most outspoken voices against what they call extremism. I've heard accusations that issues such as CRT, critical race theory, and queer theory in public schools were never issues before the Great Migration from the West Coast. Rather, they're mirages created by activists to use for their own political gain. You see, in science, there's something called the null hypothesis. That is the state of things if nothing changes, the state of being normal. Before you can do an experiment, you must define the null hypothesis so that you can accurately describe what changes result from your experiment. In society, the null hypothesis is whatever most people believe is the normal state of things. In the last decade or so, a radical left-wing zeitgeist has arisen in our society. Activists have successfully pushed their agenda to the point where extreme leftism is now the null hypothesis. That's ironic, isn't it? Leftism, which by nature is radical and progressive, has been established as normal in our society, while conservatism, which is ostensibly a movement devoted to maintaining the status quo, is tarred as being full of radical extremists. I noticed this a year ago when supposed Republicans attacked Lieutenant Governor Janice McKeon for alleged extremism. Even though Janice's views on subjects such as government lockdowns in the name of COVID, gun rights, and free speech would have been considered normal and tame just 25 years ago, the media successfully tarred her as a radical right-wing extremist. So what else is normal today? School librarians stocking their shelves with outright pornography, sexually explicit drag shows for children, children being indoctrinated to believe they're transgender. Even mundane things like the fact that government funds college, healthcare, and the arts is considered so normal that any attempt to change it is called radical. But you know what else is considered radical today? Having the same views on marriage as Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton 15 years ago. Saying that children should not actually be allowed to take part in sexually explicit performances. Supporting laws against genital mutilation of children. And finally, believing that we should cut government rather than expand it. We really are frogs being boiled in water, not noticing how the things we consider normal now have been turned on their heads. The reason for this is because we trust our national institutions. The older we are, the more we tend to assume that our government, our schools, our media, our law enforcement agencies, and our churches remain the trustworthy institutions they were in our youth. Over the last century or so, leftist activists have infiltrated and taken over nearly every institution that we consider part of the fabric of American life. It was a long and deliberate process to do by guile what they could never do by force. Consider what the socio-political landscape looks like in the year 2023. Our government uses every authority at its fingertips to persecute opponents of the regime, from pro-life pastors to Trump supporters, while abdicating their responsibility to the American people and selling out to supranational organizations and illegal migrants. Schools and universities have strayed from their mission of educating American citizens and are now working full-time to create an army of Marxist activists for the never-ending revolution. Media generates 24/7 propaganda in favor of the new secular religion of diversity, equity, inclusion, and the LGBTQ++ agenda. Even law enforcement, a pillar of American tradition and values, has in many ways been turned against the American people. During the lockdowns, police had enforced draconian mask mandates and vaccine mandates. Even today, the FBI persecutes law-abiding Americans while running cover for the criminal oligarchs who run our country. And our justice system is heavily weighted against conservatives. Many churches have been infiltrated and repurposed as well, as they drift further and further away from a traditional understanding of theology and the gospel, and closer to a philosophy based on social justice and socialism. Right now, the conservative movement is split between those who don't think the problem is really that bad, and those who think we're on the verge of a second civil war. As usual, I will take the boring middle path. On the one hand, it's not 1776. We're not going to be grabbing our muskets and shooting redcoats anytime soon. And anyone who urges you to do so is likely a Fed who wants to put you in the same jail cell as the January 6th protesters. On the other hand, people need to wake up to the truth about what has happened to our society. America is not the same country it was in 1955, or even 1995. The names and logos of our institutions are still the same, but they're entirely different inside. Pretending that the FBI, Micron, or the Boy Scouts still uphold the same values they did half a century ago is whistling past the graveyard. The frog in the pot of boiling water really is a perfect descriptor of the American people. Three events that happened in the last week serve to demonstrate what time it is in the life cycle of the American Republic. A leftist prosecutor in New York has indicted Donald Trump on charges that are normally a quiet fine for anyone else. A young man who made memes mocking Hillary Clinton in 2016 was found guilty of violating an obscure law related to election security and could be sentenced to 10 years in prison. Meanwhile, Senator Katie Britt of Alabama revealed that U.S. Marshals were instructed not to arrest protesters at the homes of conservative Supreme Court justices last year during the lead-up to overturning Roe v. Wade, even though the very act of protesting at judges' homes is already illegal. Somewhere, sometime, our country was stolen right out from under us. We still think it's the good U.S. of A., Stars and Stripes, baseball, apple pie, but it's been transformed into something awful, something terrifying. Something that more resembles communist China than the country we once loved. I'm not trying to be a black pill, but you need to understand what time it is. This is why we don't have the luxury of enduring a governor and legislature that simply want to cut taxes here or there, continue dumping the public treasury into the bureaucracy, and ignore the cliff that is coming faster and faster ahead. We need to start talking about radically reforming public schools, about breaking the hammerlock of the left-wing media, and rebuilding a judicial system that applies the law fairly and equally. There are things you can do on a personal level, too. Even if you homeschool your children, you should get involved with your local school board, because the students that graduate from your district will be your legislature and voters and governor in another generation. You should get on your library board, your city council, or any other taxing district in your community. Each of these exerts authority over some factor of civic life, and if we're to save our communities, we need people like you involved. Don't be afraid to take a job in media or government. Right now, the outlets that deliver the news and the agencies that set the rules of our communities are staffed by leftists with agendas. You have to be the change you want to see. Finally, get involved in party politics. Rather than just assuming that your local political party, your local Republicans, agree with you on your beliefs and your principles, you need to find out for yourself. Get to know your precinct committee man or run for PC. Even if you're not an elected PC, you can usually attend your monthly meetings and see what your representatives are up to. You need to understand that what we think of as normal is anything but. Don't let our enemies define the null hypothesis. Recognize how radically our nation is being transformed before your eyes. Discard the rose-colored glasses and charge boldly into the future, soberly and clear-headed. My name is Brian Ullman, and this has been What's Happening Gem State. I'll see you next time.